It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here on this Saturday. Good morning, Captain Mike.
Good morning, Captain Sean.
Good morning, man. It's
We hadn't been fishing in a while.
No,
we're still captains.
Yeah, we got to be captains because just driving your car here, we get all this rain. You'll be captain of your car going through the water out there. We've had a pretty good rainy start to, and I pay attention just being along the river at my camp, start to the year. It's dampened causeway fishing for sure on the saltwater side. Now, join us here in just a little bit. Our buddy Captain Wayne Miller says, bass don't care. The bass have got the feed bag strapped on, so we'll get into that.
It's always good and bad.
Right, and Captain Bobby's catching plenty of trout, but they have been south. He said, he was telling us Thursday, you run out from the Delta. He said, you don't have to get too far down south of like McDuffie Coal Terminal, down off the mouth of the Mobile River, and the water still is starting to look really, really good.
Right, yeah.
But he said, there's that gap there from there up to the Delta. Will we get some causeway? There's been some causeway fishing. I've seen some pictures in the last week, but it's just not the wide open just because I still think the trout are there at the bottom, but you get a big slug. Even though Barry steam plant's down around 5-something, you get this slug of ugly water up top, and I think it makes it, where the fish don't want to push up and push schools of shrimp up through that dingy water, and it's going on down at the bottom, but not up top.
And they're catching some in the Mobile River.
Yep.
They're doing fair in the Mobile River. It's just the the Spanish and the Blakely and all.
If you're in a section of river that's eight feet deep in that section, well, you don't have a lot of salt water at the bottom. You get Mobile River, you have deeper, and the Tensaw has absolutely deeper holes. So does Spanish, but that widespread bird schools, fish pushing shrimp the whole way up to the top. There's a few, but this has not been the best year for that.
No, it hadn't been great for the last several years. It's
that's right. We've had
a week or two.
Last year it got cold so quickly.
Yeah.
People don't remember that because the late winter wasn't so cold last year. But remember the beginning?
Yeah, it got cold.
And we had some cold weather. But we'll talk about the freshwater side because, like I said, it isn't bothering Captain Wayne at all on the bass side.
No, bass fishing's fine.
He sent us some pictures, some fantastic bass, some chunks.
I saw those pictures.
So we'll get into that with him in just a little bit. Also, on the hunting side, of course, we are now in, as Mike told us last week, December doldrums.
Yep.
But there's still some. I've seen a few decent deer killed during the doldrums.
You always do have them killed. You're just in between. You catch them at the first year when they're still bunched up together. Yeah, they're kind of stupid, and they're feeding, getting ready for the winter and all that. So they're in bachelor groups. You see one, you usually see three or four or five of them together. And, but after Thanksgiving, they get wiser, and they get into where the rut hadn't started. So they get into the hiding mode more. So it is kind of the doldrums in December, and usually about Christmas times or so, things start picking up. Rut starts a little bit, and usually about first of year, things wide open again. But this time of year, it gets kind of slow. Doesn't mean you're not going to kill a big one.
Right.
There's still some that will come out.
Well, and I want to talk about that with you. Maybe we'll do that later on in the show because we mentioned it last week. And you have such a success record for killing big bucks in the state of Alabama. And I can't imagine every one of them happened opening weekend or during the
week. Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
So I want to break down later in the show, kind of, let's say you only had this December doldrum period to hunt. I often joke, that's what they make duck season for. I ignore this point and go chase ducks. But if you said, hey, man, I know, I'm laying with it, I'm going to deer hunt, kind of the places you would look and the places you would set up. So we'll talk about that later in the show. I want to do this, too, because I put this question up on our Facebook page, and I want to get everybody's opinion. This is one of those, what would you do kind of questions.
Yeah.
I think it's fun to run through this. If you could only have one rifle, okay? If you could only have one center fire rifle, I'm going to let you have, because I can't be that mean, I'm going to let you have a rim fire. You still get it. Everybody gets a 22.
Yeah.
Everybody gets the old 22. But you can only have one big game, I'd say deer hunt, but center fire rifle.
Life just ain't worth living if that's right.
I know. But this is front porch of the hunting camp kind of questions.
If you had one gun.
You could have one gun.
Go wherever you want. You want to go to Alabama. You want to go out west shooting an elk.
Right.
You want to go
yes.
Wherever.
Let's say, we'll probably keep like Africa and stuff out of it. But let's say If you want
anything
gun,
in this country,
and maybe if you can, I mean, if dangerous game is your thing, it's a different thing. But let's just for the sake of discussion, hunting hoofed critters,
right?
Across this country, what is it? You could only have one, Mike.
You know, well, you'd get a magnum.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned, of some kind.
All right.
Okay, there's lots of magnums out there. 300 Magnum, you know, 270 Weatherby, which is what I use, and I use that for wherever I go. I don't care. It's a big
That's
enough
what
bullet.
You're shooting.
I'm shooting a 270 Weatherby mag.
Okay.
And I feel like I don't care where I go. If I go elk hunting, I go caribou hunting or whatever, you know, big white tail. You know, it's a gun for everything. That's why I've been using that caliber for a long time, and I feel very comfortable with it. But, you know, a 7mm mag, ballistic-wise, is real
but
close.
But you're running through – so, but for you
– for me personally, it's a
270 Weatherby mag.
Weatherby mag. That's my, that's been my preferred caliber for 25 years.
That rifle, I know, without going any further, that's a bolt-action rifle.
Yes.
So bolt-action, 270 Weatherby mag.
Yes.
Woodstock or synthetic?
Synthetic.
Synthetic stock?
Yeah.
What do you have on top of that? What are you running?
Zeiss.
Okay.
Yeah.
What by what? What?
Oh, I got a 3-12, 56 millimeter.
Okay. So that gun right there, you feel...
I feel like I can go do anything I want to do in this country.
And that's what the fun of the discussion is. And, of course, this will change by what you want to do or what you do hunting.
Right.
But you have, obviously, enough rifle to handle... anything that's going to walk out in front of you in Alabama.
Sure.
And you have enough rifle to travel to the West and hunt.
Absolutely. I feel comfortable no matter where I go. I got reminded the other day by a friend of mine. He was telling me about a red dot scope that he saw that he was going to put on a shotgun for turkey hunting, and it was like $600-something. I said, oh, my God, why would you buy something that expensive for turkey hunting? He said, I remember you telling me a long time ago, don't put the money in the gun, put it in the scope, you know? And I said, well, you're right.
Yeah, the funny thing is, I mean, I'd have your same reaction for turkey hunting. But I tell you what, the older I get, the way my eyes get, I may change my mind down the road. But for big game you taught me that. Jake Graddick taught me that. And this is a little takeaway. If y'all are, you know, got some Christmas cash or asking for a new rifle, I would say that nothing wrong with the finest of fine rifles. I love them too.
Yeah.
But if in real people like me in our world, if you have X number of dollars to accomplish this and you think, okay, here's the seesaw. The seesaw, one side is scope, one side is rifle. That seesaw better be sitting down on scope.
Yeah.
Most rifles. I mean, with very few exceptions, in today's world, most rifles out of the box are going to be able to shoot groups that will kill deer day in day out.
That's right.
Right?
Exactly right. 100%.
I mean, people say, well, this one, you know, has a tenth of a degree. Come on.
Yeah.
You know, you're shooting, if you're here in the state of Alabama, your shots are 300 and in, you know? Most people might be 200 and in their shots. Almost every rifle out there has that handled.
Absolutely. Every one of them. I don't care if you buy the cheapest of the cheapest or the very best. All, you know, 200 yards or in, it don't matter.
But the scope is a very different story.
Yes.
Because the cheapest of the cheap isn't even in the same universe as the other ones.
That's right. Yeah. And here's the way I felt about it all my life is, you know, if I go and buy a Leopo or a Nikon, which are great scopes, there's nothing wrong with a Leopo or a Nikon scope.
Right, I'm running, I got both of those represented in my arsenal.
Nothing wrong with it. Pentax, whatever. They're all really good scopes, but they're not a Zeiss and they're not a Swarovski. Okay? So, you know, I'm sitting around, I think, well, if I go buy a really nice Nikon, I'm going to always want for that Zeiss or that Swarovski. So I felt like I just saved up till I could get me a Zeiss, and I felt like Zeiss at the time was the number one scope of all. It was the best light gathering. But
Swarovski will come out with something technology wise that Zeiss will imitate, or Zeiss will come out with something.
That's right.
I will.
Either one of them be top of the line.
Right.
It wouldn't make any difference.
I agree with you. Those, if you're going to go 100%, that's. But in my reality, while I talk about this balancing seesaw, the budget still is X, whatever it is. And I say that seesaw better lean down on the scope side, but within a budget, for a lot of us, a Zeiss or a Swarovski are not in the budget.
That's right. I mean,
right,
they're expensive.
You can find, and I'll say this, you can find, now these are not cheap scopes, but these are scopes that are not at the price point of a Zeiss or Swarovski. They're not at the performance level, but they're in the 80% of range.
Or more, maybe.
Yeah. And yeah. So they're not the perfection of those two you named. But so I, you know, Leupold, love some, and Leupold is funny too. In my experience, it depends on which ones you buy.
Yeah.
They have different series and all that, and you get in the upper
That's
series,
right.
And the glass in those upper series of Leupolds, I'm telling you, it's hard to beat.
That's right.
Also, a brand I've been interested in lately, and I'm running their binoculars right now, Vortex.
Mm-hmm.
Vortex is doing some really, really good glass. I like what they're doing. I have Nikons, but I also have I think it's a Czechoslovakian brand. I got to check that. Miopta.
Yeah.
And I started with that Miopta, and I've been happy with that scope as well.
Yeah, I'll tell you a scope that I bought my grandson. I didn't want to put a Zeiss on his gun, but right. I bought a Hawk.
H-A-W-K?
H-A-W-K-E, I think.
And, I have not seen those.
Yes. And it was a 3-12, 56 millimeter. And I'm so impressed with that. It's unbelievable. It is
Price point on that is?
Price point was only like $300-something, $400-something dollars. I see what it was. It, you know, Zeiss, you're looking at $3,000
right.
or so. So I didn't want to put that kind of money in for a 12-year-old grandson. But
yes.
I did buy him that. And I want to tell you what, I am just super impressed. Lighted reticles, the whole nine yards. I think it was $400-something
right.
dollars, I believe, if
and,
I remember
and I
right.
think that's,
about,
you know,
about a year ago.
And that's a great deal because the kind of the price point where I see those scopes I consider being 80% or better as good as the Zeiss and Swarovskis has usually been about $599 if you can get in on a sale, $699, about the $699, $700
right.
mark and up. There's a sweet spot in there for very, very good scopes, you know, and you're not paying $1,000. You're close to it by the time you're out the door, but you're not paying $3,000. And
right.
you start spending, you know, you do your homework, $700-800. Hopefully, like I said, you can find sometimes scopes like that on sale for $599, something like that, and get a heck. I got a Leupold that normally I think is a $900 scope years ago for $599. It's a heck of glass.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And same with binoculars.
Right.
Exact same thing with binoculars. I've got Zeiss binoculars. They're 8x56s.
Okay.
And the reason I go with 56 is because it gathers the most light for late afternoon, and that's what we hunt in Alabama because we're trying to get the absolute last minute of hunting out of it.
All my scopes are big-bailed scopes.
That's
yes.
right. 30mm on a rifle scope, barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So we are trying to get the absolute max, and I feel like that's what you're going to get the absolute max out of. Now, that Hawk scope I'm telling you about that I bought my grandson, I won't tell you, in the afternoons – I'm looking.
It gathers it.
It gathers it. I'm just super impressed with it. I really am for the money.
Yeah.
I went to the SHOT Show and I actually talked to the guys at the Hawk
right.
booth and all, and I was really impressed with the whole company and the whole people, everybody there. I was really impressed.
I'm gonna
have
to go check those out. So Hawk scopes there, and whatever brand, a lot of brands we've thrown out there, but I think you know the takeaway is. You're joking. It started with that talk of the turkey scope. But the takeaway is, at least in my opinion, for rifles and for hunting around here, spend your money on the scope.
Optics.
And on the optics. We get in binocular talk one day, too. And then let me throw in my 2 cents, but which, by the way, 270 Weatherby Mag.
Weatherby Mag is my preferred.
That's
what's
your
preferred?
And then, because I want to hear from y'all on the Facebook page.
What's your preferred?
I'm going to give y'all, but I'm just going to teasing it right at Facebook. facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Find our post there. You can have one rifle.
Yep.
Okay, and if you want to give us a little line underneath that this is kind of what you hunt and what you might hunt, that's cool.
Yep.
Little explanation. But you get one rifle. We all get a 22. And then you get one other rifle. What rifle is it? For me, I would say right now my go-to rifle, but it couldn't do everything. I think if I buy a new rifle that would be my do-all would be probably just from shooting it a little bit and being around it and seeing the ballistics, probably a 300 Win Mag.
Yeah.
Probably a 300 Win Mag because I've got, you know, I look west a lot now. I mean,
sure.
I really want to go back out there and spend time. So 300 Win Mag. I'm shooting a set right now. My go-to rifle killed a 260-270-pound mule deer with it the other day. Killed a whitetail at 300-something the other day with it, a 7mm aught-8.
Yeah.
I'm running a Thompson Center bolt action 7mm aught-8 shooting 140 grains. with a Miopta scope.
Most time, it's all about bullet placement, Sean.
It's all about Indian, not as much arrow, right?
Yes.
Coming right back, we're going to switch gears for a second, talk some fishing. Captain Wayne Miller joins us next. So, 7 millimeter Weatherby Magnum. That's where you are on the board.
No, I'm a 270.
I mean, a 270 Weatherby Mag.
270 Weatherby Mag.
Okay, you're 270 Weatherby Mag.
But ballistic-wise, it's real close to a 7-millimeter mag. There's
right.
not a lot of difference there. But, you know, I like the Weatherby.
What's in choice of a lot of different bullets you can get for it? A lot of grain difference?
Yeah, I'm shooting a 140-grain ballistic tilt.
Okay. All right, very good. And I'll put myself on the board right now with the 7-millimeter Rod 8, although if I had one gun, and that's kind of what we're doing, by the way, just joining us, you can hit us up on the Facebook page. You get just one gun.
Yeah.
You got to use that to hunt all over the country. What gun is it? For me, I don't own one yet, but probably will hopefully in the next couple of years, 300 Win Mag. I like the way they shoot. I like
yeah.
that variety. So there's my choice, and we'd love to hear from you on the Facebook page. Just go to facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. While you're over there, too, check out the bass pictures from Captain Wayne. Captain Wayne Miller joining
He's
us.
He's killing them.
Hey, Captain.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Not as good as you. are there any fish left on the causeway that haven't had a hole punched in their mouth by you?
I tell you what, man, we see this every year, and it obviously was pretty late getting here this year as far as the fall and winter bite really coming on strong. But man, just phenomenal numbers and quality of fish being caught on the causeway, and really up in the Middle Delta, too. I mean, I've been talking to a lot of people that have been having some good trips up in the Middle Delta. But, you know, this time of year, it's hard. You can't run me off that causeway, man.
Well, this time of year, you like these cold fronts coming through, and it pushes the water out, which helps you on the bass fishing, right?
Yeah, Mike. You know, I mean, it's a scenario where, you know, I know this past week, Tuesday, we had a really big front blow in, and I mean, it was pretty harsh conditions, but, man, we had that north wind that had howled all night and into that morning, and had a low tide, just a perfect storm there, combination, that, you know, I went down and about 3.5 hours caught between 60 and 80 fish on the causeway.
Holy
I mean,
cow.
It's just,
that
you
is...
know, and that's what you can do if you know where to go and how to fish it down there.
Yeah. Now,
you know, I don't want people to listen to this and think, well, man, you know, you just go down there and catch 100 fish a day. Are those days, you know, realistic this time of year? Yes, they are.
I've been there with you and watched and been a participant in that. So, yeah, I know it's possible.
But it don't happen every day like that.
No, it doesn't. And you know, the important thing, you know, I know, you know, this week on the fishing report, you know, and, man, it's really great to listen to Bobby every week, even though I don't
yep.
do a lot of that fishing. You know, he's such a knowledgeable angler, you know, just a phenomenal guy, too. But, you know, I was listening to him talk about having a really tough day on the Delta. And, you know, a follow-up to one of those real strong days a lot of times is just that. It can be tough. So, you know, but from the standpoint of the bass, what I would encourage people to do when you have one of those days where you go down there this time of year, and you know, you can have some pretty big swings water temperature wise, but if you've got a day where the fish just really don't want to bite that well, you know, you can't catch them on crankbaits or spinnerbaits or, you know, like a rattle trap is real popular down there this time of year.
Right.
But if you can't get them to hit those hard baits, then you're forced to slow down. You know, I mean, you got to throw that plastic. But I would encourage people to make sure when you have those conditions is get in those creeks and try to find the cleanest water possible. Because it seems like on those tough days, the water clarity makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered that.
Now, let's talk about this, too. You say certain areas. Okay, not saying let's get your GPS coordinates. I fish with you. I know certain areas you like more than others, but when I was fishing with you, there's certain areas that it's almost like it's not just a spot; it's a situation and you can apply that different places. What are you looking for? I mean, if somebody's leaving out and they're heading out, are they looking for a certain – I know you said clarity, but where do you look for that first? Where do you find – does tide matter? Kind of break it down for us.
Yeah, you know, the tide and wind direction is so important down on the causeway on the lower end of the delta. And, you know, one thing, you know, you can do is, you know, just take a map of the delta and just open it up and look at it, you know, and just try to visualize, you know, based on the limited amount of trees that you have down on the south end of the delta, you know, what is a strong north wind? What is a strong east wind? What areas are going to be protected somewhat, these creeks? And what you can do is then take that onto the water with you. And as you come off the main rivers and start up in these creeks, really pay attention to that water clarity because, you know, I know like Captain Bobby was talking about, you know, they had a really tough day on the causeway down there. I think it was Wednesday of this past week. But, you know, we had had that strong north wind, and those main rivers were tore up, man. I mean, they had muddied up significantly. So you want to avoid that from the standpoint of the bass fishing. And as you move, migrate up in these creeks, pay real close attention to that water clarity. And, you know, obviously, based on how they're laid out, you know, against the main rivers and the predominant wind that we have at the time will make a big difference on, you know, the water clarity.
You know, looking at some of these pictures people would check out on our Facebook page, the bait's not hidden. The lures aren't hidden in all of them. So, and you tell us all the time what you're – I see some crankbaits in the mix. That makes Mike happy.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, and the thing about it down there right now, man, I've caught some – you know, really beautiful fish, you know, this past week. I'm talking about fish between 3 and 5 pounds.
That's big causeway bass.
That's good fish for sure. I mean, you know, we're not in South Florida, and this isn't Gunnersville. You know, I mean, you have to be realistic about what your expectations are from the standpoint of the size of the fish, and those are phenomenal fish, you know. But a lot of those have come on crawfish crankbaits, and that's one thing that's great about the Delta. I mean, there's a handful of baits, and no, we don't try to hide them because everybody pretty much knows about them.
Yeah.
And but man, these fish will eat them year round.
Now, is the river clearing up a little bit now? I know, like Bobby went Wednesday, and right after that front, and it was really blowing hard and muddying the water up. Has it? Yeah. The river cleared up some now?
Well, it has a little bit, Mike, but, you know, one thing that we had was earlier in the week when we had those extremely low water conditions with these fronts, the main rivers, that's something else you have to consider is with all that wind, it gets them really stirred up. And then with the tidal movement, you're just moving that mud up and down, and, you know, it really seems to, you know, affect them much more so than the creek.
Yeah,
and obviously a lot of the creeks on the lower end have grass in them, and you know, so that's a natural filter for the water, and it, you know, it really helps a lot.
So it clears up pretty quick.
Yeah, it really does.
So are you off of softball? Are you off DOAs and voodoos right now? Or are you just on?
You know, Sean, I've seen some people fishing live shrimp, and they're still catching some. I have not been throwing the DOA or the voodoo any because I've just been having this, you know, incredible success with crankbaits. And, you know, when I'm like Mike, man, if I can catch them on a crankbait, I'm a happy little camper.
Yeah. If I can catch them on a crankbait or a spinnerbait, I'm good. I don't, you know, the soft baits like you use a lot. I'm probably the worst on that. I like that the least. Give me a spinnerbait or a crankbait. I like, you know, like a little bit faster pace than using a worm. But sometimes that's just what they're going to hit, and that's what you got to go to. You got to be able to do that. You got to have the soft baits to use. But golly, if I can catch them on something else, I'm going to do something different than a soft bait.
Yeah, you know, and that's the key to it. I mean, and you just have to really pay attention to what these fish. you know, how they react to, you know, what you're throwing. And, you know, there's times, especially during the tidal movement, you know, when you have water moving, and man, they'll just try to eat the paint off those crankbaits for the first 2-3 hours of the morning. And then all of a sudden it's like, you know, somebody hits the old switch and turns it off. And, you know, you just got to be able to shift gears and pick that plastic up. You know, the great thing is, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, well, what's the best color to use this time of year? You know, that's debatable, but I'll give you one great tip.
Yep. Which one is
you
it?
you can go to a June bug. And a June bug will catch fish in, you know, clear water, stained water, or muddy water.
And if it's not June bug, what is it, Captain Wayne? What other color?
It's watermelon chartreuse.
That is my nickname for Captain Wayne Miller's watermelon chartreuse.
I tell you, man, I love that. You know, and people laugh at me, man. Every year during the winter, I have people that go with me, and they're amazed. They're like, man, you're going to throw a lizard?
Hey, y'all watch this.
Well, you know what? These fish eat lizards year-round. You know, it's just a great bait for the Delta. And, there's a lot of good options, you know, for people when that bite slows down. And everybody wants to go down there and catch them on the fun baits. I mean, myself included. But, you know, I have, a lot of the juice of, you know, fishing is just figuring out how to catch them.
Yeah.
You know, that's at times it can really be a challenge, but boy, when you unlock it and catch a lot of fish, it's there's nothing more rewarding than that.
Absolutely.
Wayne, I was looking at some of my tackle drawers the other day, and I pulled out gator tail worms. You remember the gator tail worms?
I remember the gator tail.
Yeah, some of my.
Oh, I have got. I bet you I've got 1,000.
You want to work a deal?
Oh man,
you want to work a deal? I love the old gator tail.
Oh yeah, gator tails are great.
Can I go one up on you?
Yeah,
the gator tail that had the pocket on the tail where you put like some Alka-Seltzer or something. Do you remember those? They came out with a gator tail that had a little pocket on that big broad tail, and you could put in like I think it was Alka-Seltzer. It was supposed to. Yeah, the fizzing was supposed to attract them to the worm. Remember that?
Yeah.
That was probably caught more fishermen than fish. Yeah, but I love some gator tails, man. That's old school.
They still catch fish.
Guaranteed.
Oh, yeah. When I use them, I just don't use them a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
That's still a great bait.
Sure it is. The motor oil color, I think, is what I've got a bunch of.
Man, you're singing my song, Mike. You are singing my song.
It all works. You just got to use them.
But
yeah, you know, it's amazing because I've got a real good friend of mine, Keith Lott,
yes,
that makes the what they call around here the Billy worm. You know, it's a little 6-inch blue plum curl tail worm, just a phenomenal little bait. And I've got a real close friend of mine that I fish with quite a bit. Man, he's got a boat that doesn't even have any glitter on it, believe it or not. man, but that guy will get in the back of the boat with you, and if it turns into a plastic bite, you better look out because he'll put that little blue plum worm on, and he will forevermore put it on you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's another dark-colored worm that's really great. You can find those in any of the local tackle shops here. And, you know, that's a great bait to throw down there when it gets tough. But, you know, the biggest thing to do is just to get your mindset to where, you know, when that fast bite, that good, you know, crankbait or spinnerbait or vibrating crankbait, you know, bite dies, you just got to be able to shift gears and slow down. And that's the toughest part of it. Once you can, you know, accept that and really start throwing some of these good baits we've talked about, you'll keep on catching fish.
Yeah. All right. Captain Wayne, let's do this. We're going to pick it back up next week because I want to talk about some of those Lott's lures because they make a really cool Christmas gift as well. And we'll talk more about where you're catching them on the causeway. Tell folks if they want to grab a trip with you, how do they do it?
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
All right, get back to punching holes in mouths out there, and we'll check back with you next week.
Okay, guys, have a great one.
Thank you, Wayne. Captain Wade Miller checking in. Get you fired up to chase a green trout for sure. We're coming right back. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. You know, check out the pictures of the bass slaughter that's been going on with Captain Wayne.
Good bass, too. Yeah. I mean, really nice-sized bass.
Those pictures up on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/FMTalk1065Outdoors. Also, the question, Mike's answered it, I've answered it, we need you to answer it. You get one gun. One gun. The one gun game. Everybody gets a 22. Because I just can't, maybe a pellet gun too. Pellet gun and 22, but then center fire, you only get one rifle. I'm not taking your guns away. I'm just saying, in this is kind of stuff we talk about on the front porch at the hunting camp.
Yeah,
get one gun. What is it? And you know, you've got the 270 Weatherby Magnum. Yeah. I don't own, but I probably would go with a 300 Win Mag. My go to gun right now. I had a 300 Weatherby, which I just sold. And people say, oh, the recoil? I'm not recoil sensitive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Well, I've got a recoil arrestor on mine.
Right.
On pretty much all my big rifles, I've got recoil arrestors on them.
Well, for me, is when that rifle's on the sled is when I'm shooting it, dialing it in, it doesn't bother me. And when I'm shooting at a game, I don't feel it. Yeah, if I had to shoot it bare shoulder all the time, I would have probably walked away from that rifle a long time ago. So I'm down to the biggest gun in the arsenal right now I'm shooting is a 7mm .08. And people, you know, I really studied ballistics on that before I went to Colorado. Well, sure. Let me tell y'all, I shot a 270-pound mule deer, all the medicine he needed, 140 grain, and then shot a whitetail at 300-something the other day, all the medicine I need, you know. Yeah. So, but I know going out west more consistently, I want something bigger. So if I had to choose my one, it'd be the 300 Win Mag, unless y'all can convince me otherwise.
Something else, yeah.
So let me know on the Facebook page. If you think I'm all wet and all wrong on that, let me know. And tell me what your one rifle would be.
You know, they got the short mags out, too,
now. Yeah, and I read about those, and they're interesting, because that's one thing for me, body size-wise, that's one thing that ran me away from that Weatherby, too, is it felt like I was swinging around a telephone pole. And if you're in a shooting house or you're in a climber or something like that, it's a pain.
Yeah.
It's a pain having that big rifle.
Yeah.
You know, heck, one of my favorite guns, the one I have dialed in for my daughter, is a Model 7. You know, I like that little rifle.
Oh, yeah.
I like real compact rifles like that. So, you know, I like that part of it. I know I obviously would want to, if I could get the 300 Win Mag and some small little rifle, that would be great.
Yeah.
But yeah, tell me what y'all think. You can leave that on our Facebook page, and we'll answer back on that. Okay, mentioned this in the first segment. I wanted to come back to this because we are in the December doldrums, but there's still good deer that get killed in the doldrums every year. And we're gonna go in another one of these scenarios. You can't wait for. I know the easy thing to say is you hunt early in the season, then you do all the honeydews during December or duck
all
hunt
the parties.
Oh no, joke. By the way, side note: this has nothing to do with hunting.
Yeah.
But are y'all like me? My every weekend going forward, I'm chaperoning a dance tonight. I got Christmas things next week and children's things. I love my children. But pretty much now, till Jesus' birthday, they got me shut down on the weekend. And I'm a weekend warrior.
Yeah.
And they got me shut down. So I'd be doing the run up, you know, drive an hour, you know, hour and 15 to go hunt 3 hours and come back and, you know, run
all
back.
All day long we do that. Absolutely we do.
It's desperate times. But, okay, so what I was getting at is it's December and you're going to try to lay with one. And you're going to try to kill a good deer. People say they just disappeared. They're still there.
Every now and then they'll stick their head out in daylight hours. The problem is you just got to be there. I mean, it's just like anything else, John. The more you do of it, the more successful you are at it. So if you're going a lot, then you're probably going to be more successful than somebody like you that get to go one time a week, every other week sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the way it is. You just got to go lay with them, especially everybody's using cameras now.
Mm-hmm.
So if you see a good buck on camera and you're, you know, in one spot, you've seen him come out, and, you know, he only comes out one time in the daylight hours every 2 weeks or something, you got to be there.
It's interesting to look at that.
That one time that he's going to come out in the daylight hours where you can get him.
You know what's interesting? Now, I'm not doing this, but I've watched some people doing this with their YouTube videos and all that, and I'm impressed. And if it may just be coincidence or they may be onto something. They take those cameras and they see the same thing. I'm only seeing this buck during daylight hours here on this date. They go back and they're looking at the weather conditions and wind directions.
Yeah.
And I watch these guys establish a pattern. They said I think in this case, we get a southwest wind. We will get a picture of this buck in daylight hours that he'll approach this field. There may be something else he does the other days, but that southwest wind wouldn't let him go where he normally goes because he couldn't put the wind in his face.
Yeah.
So on those days, he goes to this other place.
Yeah.
And they established a pattern, and they found, you know, once again, this is completely anecdotal, but they said, okay. And then they went and they killed the deer.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of an interesting thing. That's the other thing, tough thing about cameras, because when I'm talking about laying with them, I'm lucky enough that, you know, the next couple of weeks are messed up. When I get to go, I know my land well enough that I know where I'm going. And, you know, I am in climbers and ladders now, and I am close to bed and thickets. That's what I hunt. I am as close to where the trails lead down the bed and thickets, come into the little more open woods. I'm not in an area where I can see a bunch.
Yeah.
It's not a fun hunt, but it's a lot better chance of seeing that deer, seeing that buck.
This time of year.
Yes, this time of year.
A little bit later on, you change your...
I go back to the open.
Yes,
I go back
right.
to the doe. But right now, I'm not worried about them.
Right.
I'm in those areas where I can't see a bunch because I'm getting close to bed and cover. So one of the problems is, though, every time you go into a place like that, I think your footprint, your odor footprint, and letting that buck know you've been around is more. Even if you scent control and don't touch anything, it's just, you know, if you have a box stand set up on a big green field that you could approach from a downwind way, you can come in there, hunt, and leave, and they don't know. You walk into a bedding area, get in the ladder. I don't care if you don't think he smelled you. Chances big deer coming through there that night or whatever might smell you. So I think that has effect, and that's a problem too. If you have a camera you got to actually pull the card from in those areas, you have a effect long term. We'll talk a little bit more about this when we return right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Remember, Facebook page, facebook.com/FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. You want to see those fish Captain Wayne's catching?
Yep.
Or engage yourself in the one gun conversation. Get one gun, one center fire. What is it? And I'd love to hear from you on the Facebook page. All right. Went to break. We were talking about December doldrums and kind of laying with them. I mean, how about you? I mean, I'm hunting next to thickets. Where are you hunting?
Well, I've got a little different situation, Sean. I've got a 12-year-old that I hunt with every time.
Right.
So it isn't as easy for us to go get in the woods. So I'm pretty much green fields.
Okay, well, let's say this.
You know?
Let's say before you had if you were solo, where?
Yes.
Yeah, how would you be hunting right now?
Yeah, I'd be hunting like you. What my favorite hunting out of all of it is to get on a road and hunt a road.
Even this time of year?
Even this time of year, because deer feel comfortable going across the road from one bedding area to another bedding area or something, one thicket to another thicket. They'll stick the head out for a minute or so coming across the road, 30 seconds or whatever. So I've killed some of my very best deer on a road, hunting roads.
Which is pretty interesting, pretty savvy way to do it, because you're hunting thickets.
But you're not disturbing
anything. And you can see.
Yes.
See, that's the problem. And not disturbing, because that's a problem.
Well, the problem is you've only got sometimes 1 second, 2 seconds, 3 seconds. Is he big enough? Is he not big enough? You know, should I shoot him? Should I not shoot him? So you only have a split second sometimes to decide that.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you're in the woods in a thicket, sometimes they're moving slow, coming through there, stopping, browsing, whatever. You got a little more time to check him out. When they come across the road, I mean, sometimes they don't stop. They're just walking.
I got a gadget, a pretty high-tech gadget that gives you a little extra time to shoot. Have you seen this?
Uh-uh.
I think I'll probably market it this year, get people into it. I've used this over the years. It's been successful. Something I learned a long time ago on a piece of property over in eastern Baldwin County. Had big roads going through, replants and big fields. And
yeah.
It's called a hydraulic fluid bucket. We take... Now, if you get a blue bucket or if I have hydraulic fluid, yellow buckets there at the farm, that we have hydraulic fluid for the tractors, you take one. If you got long enough road, if you could do it and not mess up the wind. I'm joking, but I'm serious here. I have done this. You put that bucket in the road.
Yep.
And darn if they don't step out
and look
and
at
they
it.
Look at it. And they take an extra second or two.
That's a great thing.
And it's not a person. It's just something different. And they stop and they study it for a second.
Yeah.
And I've dropped hammer on deer before as they're looking at a hydraulic fluid bucket. Big yellow
awesome
one with a green
idea.
Handle. Yeah, so it's not, it's real high tech. It's called a bucket.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure anything else would work. You could put something there, but it was just started because that's what was around. And you got that road, and it just, as they cross, they turn and they look, and they look again and look again, and gives you time to make a shot.
That is an awesome idea. Now, that's something I have not thought about. But that would be good.
Sullivan's redneck tip of the week.
Well,
there y'all go.
Hey, that is a great tip because that's all you need is them to stop for 2-3 seconds, just long enough to evaluate them to say, is that a shooter or not a shooter? Because none of us want to shoot something that we're not proud of.
And the nice thing is, if it's a perfect scenario, when they're coming out across the road, depending on how you're set up, but let's say you're set up on the road somehow. When they're going across the road, you're going to get the side view. He sees the bucket, and he turns and looks at it. Now you get the width.
Yeah. I think that's awesome.
So it doesn't take
much
for him. When you come hunt with me and you see those buckets laying around, that's what that's all about.
I think that is awesome.
No, but you said it going into this, and what's real key, I think, to what you said, is you're hunting a thicket, but you're not disturbing it. That is one of my problems.
Yes.
And because when I go into these areas where I'm hunting that I have a chance of seeing a buck during daylight hours in December, there's just maybe, somebody else has a situation, but for me, it's tough. I don't want to do it very often because I know they sense that you're there. Even if they didn't smell you while you're hunting, if you go in there, it's like having cameras down towards a bedding area. I'm funny about that. Yeah. I mean, if you could, sometimes when it works perfectly, I'll check cameras if I have time, right when the rain's coming. And you got the winds are up, trees are making a lot of noise. It's already humid and leaves aren't crackly. You go in there, pull the card, and hopefully that rain starts falling and washing scent away.
Yeah.
But how many times you get that scenario?
Well,
once a season or something like that.
When you got cameras out, you got to go check them.
Yeah.
And
that's a tough thing, though. If you want to try to put that camera down where you may get more daylight pictures of that buck, you're getting closer to an area where you bother the game.
Yeah.
Versus that camera that's way out on a field or a road or something like that.
Well, I feel like hunting a road is like hunting a Sendero.
No, it's perfect because you're hunting thickets without disturbing them, and you get to see that distance. All right. Pick up this conversation a whole lot more when we come back next week. Remember, check us out online. Love to get your comment on your one gun. What is it? Let us know.